In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
Every Friday morning, our resident historian Felix Bunnell joins us for All Over the Map, which is his quick look at the stories behind the names of local places and things. And this week, we know now that it couldn't beat the iPod, but where did Microsoft get the name for the Zune?
It's a burning question, I know, Dave. It's easy to make jokes about the Zune. We've all heard it called the Edsel of MP3 players. I've used it myself as a punchline every now and then, guilty as charged. Now, we'll get to the name in a second. First, a quick history. Autumn 2021 is the anniversary of a couple of big Zune milestones. The first, it was 15 years ago, this November 13th, when Microsoft announced the Zune with a big press event at Westlake Park. The Zune was just like an iPod, Apple's MP3 player, but it also had some cool features the iPod didn't have, like an FM radio. Who could disagree with that?
Yeah.
And a feature whereby you could share audio files, like your favorite songs and photos, wirelessly with other Zunes. That other Zune holder could then play that shared song three times before it would disappear. Now, at the Westlake Park event, the Zune was rolled out with great fanfare by Bill Gates. Even John Richards, the popular KEXP morning guy, was on hand for the fun, but the fun didn't last. Now, because the other milestone was 10 years ago, October 4th, 2011, the Zune news that day was bad. Here's the Seattle Times archive robot reading part of the story.
Zune player appears to be officially dead. The Zune player support and service page says, "We recently announced that, going forward, Windows Phone will be the focus of our mobile music and video strategy, and that we will no longer be producing Zune players."
The Seattle Times had a reading robot?
Well, on the archive they do, and I hope they don't replace radio people with that, because that would be very troubling to hear that voice every morning. Now, death was an instant. The Zune brand officially went away in October 2012. Music downloads and streaming ended November 2015. Now, I've always wondered where the name Zune came from. We know the Edsel was named after Henry Ford's son, Edsel Ford. We know New Coke was literally Coke with the word new in front of it.
Yes.
So I reached out to Microsoft. They weren't able to help me. They've apparently moved on. But I found a guy in the UK named Peter Bull who's just published something he calls the Zunepedia. He doesn't know the name origins, but he told me the code word for the Zune while it was in development was Argo. The various versions of the Zune all had code names too. Peter Bull also shared a copy of the original brand guidelines, which said the name Zune was chosen because it, quote, sounded both active and fun while suggesting an association with music and technology. Of course it does. Now, here's the really breaking news here. I also tracked down a former Microsoft employee who was involved with Zune and a number of other projects. This person told me that the name came from internal brainstorming at Microsoft, and specifically the concept of Zune Tunes, which was an early name for that sharing concept. So that, perhaps, is the origins of Zune. Now, if there's anyone listening out there in the Northwest who was involved with Zune and who can confirm this information or offer some alternative story, send a text to 888-973-5476, because I would love to actually have this confirm the story. I also want to thank a local podcaster named Tim Ellis. He shared photos of his Zune tuned to Cairo FM. And he also shot a video during the great Zune freeze of New Year's Eve 2008 when all the Zunes shut down around the world for several hours, but they all came back automatically by themselves. I'll have more about that later at mynorthwest.com.
But I assume the FM radio would still have worked, right?
It does still work. And this gentleman, Tim Ellis, he listens to podcasts while he's using his smartphone to make videos, and he listens to Cairo radio on his Zune.
On his Zune, because FM radio always works. And there's no buffering, Felix. Just remember that.
And the quality, it's like it's HD. I think it's HD
excellent.
Radio, too. So the audio quality is amazing, and it's instantaneous.
Exactly.
It has
all
a future, Felix's, Dave.
All of Felix's features are on MyNorthwest.com. And we have a big Halloween show coming up, right?
Oh, we do. Have you been practicing your lines on that old script I sent you the other day?
Is that actually Orson Welles' original script?
I believe it is. It's the original document that was turned into a PDF.
Wow.
I can't remember where I got a hold of it, but I'm working on typing up our own version of the script, which we always modify slightly, of course.
Yes, of course.
But you can see Welles' genius in those lines he crossed out or stuff he emphasized, and they really love Campbell's soup because that was the sponsor back in 1939. It's all about the soup.
All about the soup. Thanks, Felix. Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Lacey Evans. Microsoft has introduced Windows 11, and to give us a closer look at it, from GeekWire, here is Todd Bishop. You've been using it for how long now?
Not a long time, Dave. In fact, I've been switching back and forth between Windows 11 and Windows 10. I'd say that I've been using Windows 11 for a total of maybe 4 cumulative days, so still very early impressions.
Okay, is this a must-get update, as in if you don't get it, your computer will stop working?
Absolutely not, no. In fact, Microsoft is going to be supporting Windows 10 through October 2025, so you've got a few years yet.
Now, I just bought an all-in-one computer, which has something called Windows 10S on it, but it promises it will essentially upgrade itself to Windows 11 when it's my turn.
That's right. It'll roll out through the automatic updates. They'll basically say on the little toast in the bottom of your screen, essentially, hey, your upgrade is ready. I got to say, though, get rid of that Windows 10S, Dave. That's pretty rough.
Really? There's a lot of stuff it won't let me run.
It's very locked down. It's meant more for education scenarios, schools where they want to really control what the students do.
I thought Windows 10X was like a souped up version. I thought the S stood for souped up. No?
I think it might stand for stinks. Can I say that on the radio?
No, but you did. So we'll let it sneak through. So, is it faster? Every single computer I've bought has gotten slower and slower. And my fastest computer was the first one that was installed in Cairo back in 1982. It was DOS. It was on a green screen, but it was fast.
Oh, well, now, I cannot answer that question scientifically, Dave. I can tell you that Microsoft says, and the people who've reviewed this in depth say, that the performance is better and it's more stable. Mm-hmm. However, I've been testing it on a device that has 32 gigs of RAM. It is much faster on that computer, but I think it has to do more with the specs. And frankly, I think that is a bigger picture takeaway here. To me, the biggest factor in performance and speed is your system, you know, the memory and your processor speed. At least that's been my experience.
32 gigs of RAM. So you could launch nuclear missiles with your machine.
I'm pretty sure I could start World War III. Yes. Ah.
Okay. Have they moved anything around in a way that's going to, ruin your work routine?
They've moved things around. The biggest thing is that the start menu and the button they're in the middle now. They're not in the lower left. And it took me a little bit of adjustment, Dave. I've got that muscle memory where I go to the lower left.
Well, sure.
And I will say it's prettier. And I will say the other thing, they've done some nice things in the menus. I'll give you an example. If you go into the settings, into the system preferences, they create these little buttons up at the top that must be determined by some kind of AI that is based on the most frequently used tasks or actions, because more often than not, what's up there for me is the thing that I'm trying to do. So in that way, some of the user interface changes are actually very nice.
It learns your routine then.
I'm not sure if it's learning my routine or if it's learning the routines of the masses over time. I don't know that nuance.
What about the idea of integrating your laptop with your phone?
Yes. Your phone app on Windows 11, in my experience, is far superior to the Your Phone app on Windows 10. And this to me is key. I hate emailing photos from my phone to my computer, text messaging. I love doing that on my computer. I have an Android device, so I've been doing this through Google Messages and Google Photos. The Your Phone app on Windows 11 makes it so you can do this effectively in the operating system much, much better. And frankly,
really?
I know this sounds weird, but the degree to which we rely on our phones these days, that alone makes it a reason to consider the upgrade when it's available to you.
Now, this will work with an iPhone too?
It works in a limited way with the iPhone. It works much more effectively, as I understand it, with Android.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say it's stable. And I will say this, that it has been, I remember back in the day where crashes blue screens were a regular thing. But I have to say, it's been a long time since my computer crashed because of some problem with the loaded software. Usually it's because of an internet hiccup or something like that.
Very true. And that really, all of this speaks, Dave, to the fact that the web is so much the center of everything that we do these days that, frankly, an operating system update at the PC level, it doesn't have quite the meaning that it did. And, you know, Windows also is going to be coming in a subscription version. Microsoft is essentially announcing Windows On Demand, where you'll be able to sit down at my computer or someone else's computer and effectively stream the operating system to any desktop. In some ways, the operating system is becoming the web, if that doesn't blow your mind.
Yes. Because that means when the web goes down, everything, goes down.
Yeah. And that version of Windows that will stream is called Windows 365, and you'll be able to get Windows 11 as part of that.
So they're going to jump directly from 11 to 365.
Now that's a big upgrade.
That is one big upgrade. Todd Bishop from GeekWire. Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Dave.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross here and Hannah Scott there. In the first televised debate in the race for Seattle's next mayor, Bruce Harrell and Lorena Gonzalez tackled homelessness, policing, taxation, zoning, and there was also some finger-pointing. Let's go to Hannah for some of the highlights. Hannah.
Yes, good morning, Dave. So this debate, hour-long debate, started off with just some opening statements about where the two candidates felt that they stand and where their advantages were. They both definitely used this hour to try to point to the stark differences between them or highlight the differences between them, both, you know, being former city council presidents or current city council president, and just trying to kind of draw the line and where they differ. Bruce Harrell says, right out of the gate, he's the guy who's got the ear of the people.
They are starving for effective leadership, sort of a no-nonsense approach. They want the homelessness issue addressed with a sense of urgency. They want people out of the parks and off the sidewalks and out of tents. They want them to have warm water, and they want them to have heat, and they don't want to be demonized by saying they want the parks back, because they want them housed, and the people who want to be housed want services. We're not getting that from City Hall.
And for Gonzalez's part, she pointed to this being about the future of Seattle being on the line.
As a parent, like so many of you, I know that we are at a critical crossroads. Will we be a city that is only accessible and available to the wealthy who can afford million-dollar homes? Or will we be a city that is inviting and welcoming to families of all incomes, where every neighborhood is a good one to live in and safe?
So right out of the gate, like many of our Seattle races, current and in the past, it's really kind of the line between the Bruce Harrell. She points to him as being the guy who's kind of backed by business and that group, whereas Gonzalez would say she is backed by labor. She's fighting for the working people. That was more her narrative. Both agreed, though, that homelessness had to be the top priority.
I do not believe that people should be living outside. We need to work clearly and urgently to rapidly increase shelter and to make sure that we are still looking at how we can build more affordable housing throughout our city and increasing access to mental health care and substance use disorder treatment throughout the city. This is the number one challenge for the city, and I'm looking forward to being able to work on those issues together with our broad community to create rapid and meaningful progress in the first 100 days of my administration.
And she wanted to focus on kind of a longer term approach, though, too, to the homelessness issue. Really take it on holistically, rapidly was kind of her buzzword in this homelessness debate, where she talked about the need to get thousands of new shelter beds built up right away. Harrell, he said he would have a sense of urgency.
First thing we will do is publish a plan. You'll see cost per person, cost per unit. You'll see a dashboard of where we are now, which is totally unacceptable. A sense of urgency. And when I talk about moving people out of parks, out of sidewalks, out of playgrounds where you see syringes and these intolerable conditions, I'm talking about building and treating our way out of this issue with a sense of urgency. Under the Harrell administration, you have no excuse making.
He also elaborated on what he felt was the need for some of our bigger businesses in town to be part of the solution.
We will never reach a time where we'll say we have all of the taxes, all of the revenue to solve the problem. What we'll do under my approach is we will exhaust every possible tax we could, from looking at our regressive tax structure and making sure we increase and use and change a more progressive tax structure. Yes, there's no disagreement there. But we also have these very wealthy corporations. If we get into the economics of this city, we are a wealthy city. So we're going to also tap into the resources around us and make sure that all hands are on deck under the Harrell approach.
But ask now, what that means, because that sounds something like what Lorena Gonzalez would say. I mean, she's in favor of the Amazon tax, for example. What is he talking about there?
I think what he's referencing, again, you don't get a lot of specifics in this, but my take in the comments I've heard him make is that he's going to be more kind of like what Mayor Durkin has done when it comes to Amazon and business. So the last couple of legislative sessions, there was some behind the scenes stuff going on to try to get something similar to our jumpstart payroll tax that the city of Seattle currently has. The something similar like that on a state level, perhaps. And I know those discussions are actually still going on behind the scenes to try to get some more progressive revenue. So I think it would, it's more about sitting at the table with some of our bigger businesses and coming to a solution together to where they would, something they would support that also brings in some revenue. I think we saw Microsoft get behind a plan a couple of years ago that didn't end up passing. So I think that's what he's talking about. Whereas Lorena Gonzalez, of course, would be more about, you know, passing the Amazon tax, things like that. And she definitely took this opportunity to point out that her opponent has that business backing.
I am supported by working class families because they know I am serious about bringing to bear the reality of corporations paying their fair share. My opponent, on the other hand, is supported by the very people who are in court right now fighting to overturn a progressive tax on the largest, wealthiest corporations in our city. So that is a huge distinction. I'm not going to punt to the state legislature to fix our revenue problems. We have an opportunity to do that here, and we should take it.
So again, she's there a little bit pointing to Mayor Durkin having done this work with the state legislature on the taxes I was just talking to you about. Harold responded to that, though, pretty hard.
When I met people at Green Lake and Broadview Thompson Elementary, there were no corporations there. These are the people of Seattle that are saying, we like your messaging. So that narrative is a false narrative, and I think people need to call that out.
Well, since you jumped in, Bruce, and we're going to let Lorena.
Sorry, bad edit there. The zoning conversation also came up, and there was some significant difference, I think, between the two of them. Let's see if I can get this to play right.
More housing choice in our most attractive neighborhoods and invite more families of varying incomes into those neighborhoods to live with us and benefit from some of the prosperity that many of our low-income families and our working-class families have been excluded from, precisely because of the strict nature of our existing zoning laws.
So Bruce Harrell had been pointing out that he believes she supports the elimination, as we discussed, of all single family zoning. And he doesn't want that. He wants to have a larger conversation.
If we're going to build apartments, the other issue that I talk about that no one else talks about is the conversion from apartment buildings to condo ownership, because condo ownership is very difficult in this state. Legally, I've played a role in that. We are one of the most difficult states to convert. I want people to have generation wealth passed down, and that's why I'm not quick to say the total elimination of single-family zoning. This has to be a citywide discussion. We will lead it, but we're not going to come in and say we support the total elimination of single-family zoning.
You also had various barbs going back between the two of them. You know, at one point, I think Lorena Gonzalez linked him when she was talking about his backers to some folks who have also been big donors to President Trump, mm-hmm. former President Trump. So a little bit more uptick in that negativity than I had seen between them in the past. And on policing, this was a debate that was billed as an economic, or the economy was the topic, and that veered over into, you know, homelessness, a little bit of policing, because there's so much overlap there. And they really didn't agree on a great deal. They both, at one point, they talked a little about policing. The next debate will be more on the public safety aspect. But Bruce Harrell pointed out that some of the things that Lorena Gonzalez says was wrong with our SPD force are things that have been put in place and happened under her watch as the former chair of the Public Safety Committee on the Seattle Council, I believe in 2018 and 2019. So a little bit of pointing at the records. And I do believe he, though, was also a Public Safety Committee chair back in his time on the council as well.
Hannah Scott. Hannah, thank you very much.
You bet.
It is time now for your Daily Dose of Kindness, brought to you by Robert W. Baird and Company Incorporated. And it's time to meet one of the new recruits of the U.S. Capitol Hill Police Force, possibly the most valuable, but definitely the cutest. CBS's Chris Van Cleve has the story.
3-year-old black lab Lila is on a new kind of paw patrol at the U.S. Capitol, sniffing out those who could use a friend. And after January 6th, she's been busy.
Cops don't like to ask for help.
Nope. No.
Capitol Police officers Jeff Albanese and Caroline Edwards worked on the 6th. Edwards was among these officers overrun by rioters. She suffered a traumatic brain injury.
I just remember at one point thinking, my God, this is a war zone. Oh, baby.
Even as they heal, both officers are part of the department's new peer support program. While they've found cops, we'll talk to other cops. Sometimes what they really need is Lila.
How has the dog helped? Any problems you have, even if it's for just a few seconds, disappear?
This sense of comfort, release, not having to talk about anything at all.
Lila was trained as a seeing eye dog in California, but her love of chasing squirrels left her better fit for brightening people's days.
Everyone loves the dog. The dog allows us to start conversations.
What happens when she goes into a room?
Smiles.
A helping hand from a four-legged friend. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Washington.
Now from the Gian Ursula Show, which starts at 9 o'clock here in Kire Radio, here is G. Scott. It'll be, Big Ben versus what, Mean Gene? Do we have a nickname for Gino yet?
Not yet. Outside of it's Gino time, other than that, yeah. Big it's Ben is, he's Big Ben, Mr. Potato. I don't know what, because he, you know. Anyway, the Sunday Night Football is happening. The Seahawks are traveling to Pittsburgh to play. Don't look about the previous records. That's not a positive to bring up on how many games the Seahawks have won there. All I know is they that's the place where DK Metcalf, September 15th, 2019, got his first touchdown in their house. So hopefully he's successful again. I do believe that the Seahawks have the better quarterback starting in that game because Ben Roethlisberger literally cannot throw the ball anymore, and he's only starting still out of respect.
He cannot. Now, he cannot. I was watching highlights from last week's game. He had some pretty long passes there.
Would you say they were highlights?
Highlights.
Right.
you know, slow motion. But it looked pretty impressive in slow motion.
Hey, Dave, they don't show the low lights. No, they don't show the low lights. So again, now I'm going to go to the Captain Obvious. Mm-hmm. The one that everybody is wondering about, asking about. They're asking about this Seahawks defense. Yeah, yes. That defense that has given up a lot of yards this year. I think that this is a game where, yes, look, the Seahawks defense is not what it has been. No question about it. However, sometimes you can get some breaks. The Seahawks need some breaks. And what I mean by some breaks, they need to cause some turnovers, need to get maybe a fumble recovery, an interception, get some takeaways to kind of get some confidence going, right? Mm-hmm. We got to remember on this defense, there's a lot of young guys. They're missing some experience right now.
Well, people I noticed last week were really beating up on Jamal Adams. What about Jamal?
Okay, well, the thing about Jamal Adams is how they are playing him, where last year, okay, and this is, I said this last year. Like, everybody was excited. Like, oh my goodness, did you see Jamal Adams? Well, Jamal Adams basically was playing there at the line of scrimmage, rushing the quarterback often, something that was kind of uncharacteristic of Seahawks defense because they usually wouldn't have the safety blitzing like that. But last year they were successful. Well, like everything else in the NFL, once you have tape, once you have an understanding, offenses can now study that.
People got wise.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So now you have Jamal Adams maybe in situations where we used to see Cam Chancellor in, right? Like, so maybe he isn't rushing as much, and maybe he's in coverage right now. So, again, sometimes when things are a little different or things you're trying to try something new, maybe there can be some issues. So I'm not making excuses for the defense. I'm going to say this. I believe that the defense is going to have to be, if you will, heroic. They're going to have to be the group that's going to have to get a couple takeaways or something like that. But I think this offense, and where the story is going to be, is the fact that this is the first game that number three has not been the starter in 10 years. Right? Like, that's going to be
big
a
deal.
Difference. But I, you know what? Look. For 10 years, this offense has been based around Russell, no doubt about it. And so there is no replacing him right away. That's a Hall of Famer, no question. However, I think this offense is pretty good, even though I'm a little worried about what's going on with Chris Carson because it seems like he hasn't been healthy. He didn't practice yesterday, so Alex Collins is going to be that running back. So, look, I still think they got the best duo, a tandem when it comes to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So, we'll see. Yeah.
So this is they're both 2-3. So this sounds like you're saying it's a pretty even match. On Geno Smith, did you watch his press conference? Did you see shades of Russell Wilson in in the way he responded to questions.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, Geno Smith, let me just let you, Geno Smith was a bad man back in the day, right? Yep. Like West Virginia, you know, where he played, he was pretty good, and he was a starting quarterback for the Jets out there. And then, you know, he's been in the league a while, and you know, he's somebody you don't really hear from unless you're going to do the coin toss, right? Mm-hmm. But he's been here in the same quarterback room with Russell Wilson. So you got to think that he's going to maybe have some mannerisms. He maybe is going to act a certain way. And I think Pete Carroll is going to tell him one important thing. Don't turn the ball over. That's all you got to do. Don't turn the ball over.
Do you need action. Do you need to tell that to a quarterback? Don't they already know that's a bad idea?
You look across the NFL, you'd wonder what is going on. You know what I mean? You ask the Cleveland Browns, like, if the Cleveland Browns would love to have a quarterback that doesn't turn it over. Yeah, so it's kind of an issue. Yeah. But I don't want to put – I don't like to say must-win games because it just kind of feels weird. You got to put in the pressure on it, but this is a must-win.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, yes. I mean, if the goal, of course, is to make it back to the Super Bowl at some point, then a game like this would have to be a must-win game. Yeah.
Real quick, how are you going to watch the game on Sunday? That's what the listeners want to know.
On television.
What is your, well, like, you know, what's your setup? Are you watching it downstairs where you do your radio? Are you upstairs? Oh. Are you wearing Seahawks apparel? Help us get a visual of what Dave Ross is like when he's watching the game.
All right, fine. I'm sitting on a computer playing a solitaire game called 40 Thieves with the game on the other side of the room. And when I hear Steve Rabel get excited, then I quickly look and pay attention. Okay? That's the way it is. Sometimes there's a snack involved. But there are some slow parts in football. I have to keep my mind occupied.
Do you wear anything, Seahawks?
No, I do not. I mean, I wear something, but I don't dress up. I don't believe in that kind of thing.
Right. Do you need me to get you some Seahawks stuff?
I have ample Seahawks gear. I've worked for Cairo 42 years. Every year we get some. I have a closet full of Seahawks. Would you be happy if I wore Seahawks gear?
Yes, I would.
All right.
To prove it, take a picture. And I know you want the final score, right?
Yes, I want the final score, please.
Let's see. The score is going to be 29-23 Seahawks.
29-23 Seahawks. It's in the books. G. Scott, 9 o'clock on Cairo Radio. Thank you, G.
See you, buddy.
Well, as you heard, there's going to be no extension for unvaccinated state workers who will lose their jobs on Monday unless they get it done. And we also have a few more new rules if you plan to attend a large event here in Washington State in the near future. Let's go to Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott with the latest on the local COVID mandates. Hannah.
Yes. So as you said, there is not going to be any extension for this mandate come Monday. The governor has that, I think it was just under 92% of state workers are completely vaccinated at this point. He intimated that there's perhaps some who are vaccinated and haven't turned in their paperwork essentially yet. So they're hoping to get that going right away. And he thanked those who are about to lose their jobs, saying, you know, we appreciate that you've been here and all of that. As far as the impact on state agencies goes, he didn't think there would be a big disruption.
It's going to allow us to continue our essential services. We're going to keep operating just fine, in part because of the dedication of our state employees. There might be some operational changes in agencies. We are capable of handling those changes because we have had so many employees step up to the plate. So I'm optimistic also that these numbers will continue to grow even after October 18th, because I believe there will be those who will make a decision after October 18th to return to their jobs if those jobs have not yet been filled.
You know, Hannah, I'm a little curious. Have Republicans criticized him for this, because this seems like what they've been asking for years? They've been saying that you could run the state on far fewer employees than we actually do. And, you know, they seem to have won that argument in this case.
I don't think that's what this is about. I think this is absolutely, he's, you know, thinks he's not going to lose a significant number of employees. And yes, absolutely. There is a lot of criticism about this and a lawsuit, if I'm not mistaken. And from, yeah, many Republican lawmakers who think he shouldn't be making these decisions by himself, which is the way they see it. And that there should in no way be a threat of losing your job because you refuse to get vaccinated. So yeah, it's the same arguments that you've seen all along. I do want to point out, and this isn't getting as much coverage as some of the other stuff, we heard from our state health secretary, Dr. Umar Shah, yesterday at this press conference as well, who said, you know, we hear a lot about the good news and the declining cases and all of that, but he wanted to stress the situation.
If you haven't done so already, please do your part to help us fight this pandemic. The numbers are continuing to be at a rate and a number that is extremely high in terms of hospitalizations and cases, but we are confident if we work together, we will continue to be able to see the success in our state and once and for all be able to end this pandemic.
He says the case rates right now are still the highest that they've ever been in the pandemic, with the, you know, exception of this a little bit higher that they were during the Delta surge. And they're very concerned. He also laid out some concerns about going into the holidays, especially starting with Halloween.
I want to make sure that you are not having just a costume mask, but a true mask that's going to protect you or your children, your loved ones. Please avoid large gatherings around Halloween, but also around Thanksgiving and later holidays. I will say that Thanksgiving is just 6 weeks away. So we want to make sure people are doing what they can to mask up, avoid large gatherings, and certainly with the holidays approaching, to get vaccinated.
The large event mandate that is going to kick in is going to require large events of 1,000 or more people. So your concerts, your conventions, sporting events, anything like that is going to be required to verify that you've got the vaccine. So attestation is not going to be acceptable here. You're going to have to show your, like, a CDC card, like your vaccine card, images of that work, I think.
What about ID? To make sure that
No. They will not ask for ID. They made
really,
that clear.
Because when we went to the ballet, they asked for not just your
vaccine. Did you go with Tom? Because he said the same thing.
Yeah. They wanted the vaccine card and the ID to make sure it was you.
Right. And that came up yesterday, and they said, no, they will not ask for identification. That's not something the state wants to do. It's part of the, you know, we're a welcoming state kind of thing. So I think there maybe was a lack of clarity. That might be why, or perhaps it's a policy of their own for the business. I think they can do it however they want. But at the state level, there's not going to be that requirement for the ID, which leaves concern among people that you could fake it. There is also something else that's around the corner, and in the interest of time, I'll just tell you, instead of having the governor do it, there's the federal discussion about other mandates for other workers, businesses with 50, it's either 50 or 100 or more employees that is being discussed with OSHA right now and is expected to come down. The governor said yesterday that what he's hearing is that the feds are going to include a testing option. So if you don't want to get vaccinated, you could get that negative test. And he made it pretty clear that that's not the position of the state. So if that federal order comes down, it sounds like they may add a little more of their own rules to it here at the state level.
All right. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.